Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast of the Loadseeders for Friday the 26th of March, 2021. Sorry about laughing, but we were just discussing the big cheese conspiracy that Callum is currently in the middle of debunking.
Look, big calcium, not necessarily big cheese or big milk.
Sorry, it's just that why do we need to drink 3 liters of
the
milk?
The mineral in general is conspiring against us.
Right, okay, well, that's good to know. Anyway, before we end up down that rabbit hole, we've got a few announcements. You don't want to know.
Look forward to
about.
The premium podcast.
Yep. We'll tell you on the Zoom call, in fact, that that's coming up at 4 p.m. today. So if you're a gold tier subscriber, you can join us in the Zoom call at, like I said, 4 p.m. We'll be hanging out and just explaining to you why all of this leads down a rabbit hole, I suppose. In the meantime, we've got a few new pieces of premium content. Hugo has done a really interesting breakdown of Bolivia's current political crisis, if you are interested in that kind of thing. Apparently, Bolivia's former president has been thrown in jail by the Socialist Party, accused of carrying out a coup that she says hasn't taken place in a controversy revolving around likely election fraud. And of course, there's part two of the premium podcast from Thick Concepts Leading into Ethical Knowledge, where we establish that ethics is not a science, it is an art, and therefore the scientists are bad people. And I stand by all of this from a purely scientific perspective. But it's really, really good. And it's about building up the concepts that you will need to understand fully the book Brave New World, because I think that all of these points are exemplified in the book, and that will be coming, I think, next week or the week after, but it'll be fairly soon. It's been an awful lot of work building up to this, but I think it's going to be worth it. Anyway, in the meantime, let's talk about Joe Biden's first press conference. Ah, he's all grown up. Our little Joe, he's doing so well, and he, for an entire hour, stood in front of the press that I think he had probably had some forewarning of the questions they were going to ask and answered them. So, I mean, it was quite dull, to be honest, for most of it, because Joe Biden is not a very outstanding orator. It was an hour and 30 minutes long. Well, not even actually, because he spends like 20 minutes not appearing in the beginning. But he gives a rambling intro and then just goes into the questions. And he's got some points that are hopeful, like he thinks they might leave Afghanistan by next year. No, you won't. Don't even begin to, you know, pretend that. He says they're going to try and end the filibuster. And the filibuster is a product of Jim Crow, apparently, which I didn't know. But there are various things. But anyway, the important stuff I've clipped out. So let's go to the first one where he's talking about the immigrant, the migrant crisis at the southern border.
Well, look, I guess I should be flattered. People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening. That I'm a decent man, or however it's phrased, that, you know, that's why they're coming, because, no, Biden's a good guy. Truth of the matter is, nothing has changed. As many people came, 28% increase in children to the border in my administration, 31% in the last year of, in 2019, before the pandemic, in the Trump administration.
That's not true. Like, we've got the numbers. I don't know why he would say something untrue. I mean, if we just go to the link, then we can just see them because the numbers are public. So if we scroll down a bit, we can see the crossings. The 2019 one, he is right that it was high, but it wasn't nearly as high. I mean, Biden's one is a good 30,000 more people. So the blue line, as you can see, is the border crossings under Biden from 2021. The orange one is 2019. And the like darker orange one was the 2020. So under Trump, it was remarkably low. But he's right. That is, you know, starting to get the height of the summer. You probably don't want to cross a desert in the height of the summer. But no, his border crossings are significantly higher by about
60% increase.
Well, about 30% from 2019. But, you know, definitely huge, huge from 2020. But that's because Joe Biden has been literally telling them to come. And we know this because in previous podcasts, we've shown the migrants themselves saying, well, I wouldn't have come if Joe Biden hadn't told me to come. And he seems to think that that's not the case. Let's play clip two.
Does anybody suggest that there was a 31% increase under Trump because he was a nice guy and he was doing good things at the border? That's not the reason they're coming. The reason they're coming is that it's the time they can travel with the least likelihood of dying on the way because of the heat in the desert, number one. Number two, they're coming because of the circumstances in country. In country.
Right. So essentially he's saying they're S-hole countries and that's why they're fleeing. And they're doing it because they're coming in the winter, so it's not so hot. I mean, that's why they probably choose this time. But the fundamental reason that they're coming is, as they say, because Joe Biden's the president and he'll let us in. And
I think we can take them at their word.
Yeah. I mean, why would they be lying to smear you, Joe? You know. But one of the journalists actually does say, "Well, look, I mean, we'll let her play because I mean, just utterly BTFOs, Joe, to be honest."
You just listed the reasons that people are coming, talking about in-country problems, saying that it happens every year. You blamed the last administration. Sir, I just got back last night from a reporting trip to the border where I met 9-year-old Josel, who walked here from Honduras by himself, along with another little boy. He had that
Astounding.
Phone number on him, and we were able to call his family. His mother says that she sent her son to this country because she believes that you are not deporting unaccompanied minors like her son. That's why she sent him alone from Honduras. So, sir, you blame the last administration, but is your messaging in saying that these children are and will be allowed to stay in this country and work their way through this process, encouraging families like Josel's to come?
I mean, why even ask? Is that encouraging them? Well, I mean, we phoned up the mother. I was like, why did you send him? Ah, because Joe Biden will let him in. The answer is yes. I mean, but obviously Biden is in denial about this and just won't accept the facts, at least from the mouths of the people who have sent their own children to march 1,000 miles to try and get to the American border. He's like, no, it's not me. It's because they live in S-hole countries and the mother's house is an S-hole. And it's like, suddenly it's like, what are you dunking on the Honduran mother's for? He's like, oh, it must be terrible in there. It must be awful. They wouldn't do that unless it was absolutely, you know, like Trump would describe it. It's like, Joe, have, you know, they're people with dignity, you know, try and show a little.
With nothing to gain from lying.
Yeah, with nothing to gain from lying. But
like they're not secret Trump voters trying to smear you.
Yes. Yeah, even though you are right that the conditions in Honduras must be literally unlivable, must be awful, which is literally how he phrases it. It's like, dude, they're not animals. Like,
that's, you know, why 100% of the population have left for neighboring countries.
Exactly, yeah. You know, there are some people, I mean, they have mobile phones, Joe. Like, the kid brought a mobile phone that they called his mother on, you know? So it's not, they're not like, you know, cracking rocks together and living in their own feces, for Christ's sake. You know, just calm down, Joe. But then he gets to the best straw man in the world. I love this.
The vast majority, the overwhelming majority of people coming to the border and crossing are being sent back.
Oh, that's
are being
right
sent back.
Oh, no, it is the right clip.
Thousands, tens of thousands of people who are over 18 years of age and single, people one at a time coming, have been sent back, sent home.
Right, so Joe Biden is following Donald Trump's border policy. It's like, don't come, as he said earlier, you know, the other day, don't come, and they're getting sent back, so he's deporting them all. So it's like, why even have the messaging that you can come? Why tell people? Why tell people, oh, we're going to be the humanitarians who take everyone in and resettle them in the United States when you're not doing it?
Because as we've seen, it's not true. They're not being sent back. You have catch and release, which is no border.
Exactly. But then the way that he justifies all of this, and even then he says less than 1% of the people who arrive are children under 18, right? He says this. And it's like, okay, I don't know whether that's true or not. Your previous statistics weren't true, so I don't see why I'd take this at face value, but let's just assume for the sake of argument that is true. Like, why do you have to set up this ridiculous kind of position that he sets up in this clip?
The idea that I'm going to say, which I would never do, that if an unaccompanied child ends up at the border, we're just going to let him starve to death and stay on the other side. No previous administration did that either, except Trump. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Oh, thank God.
I'm sorry, I forgot about the great Mexican famine of 2016 to 2020.
Trump just, you know, just standing there looking across the border through the gates and all these starving Guatemalan children going, good, good, that's how it should be. You know, Joe, no one wants a bunch of children starving at the border. You could give them food.
It's not like the border ends and then it's literally no man's land.
Well,
like,
actually, the Mexican in some places that is like
there
that.
With the Mexican government.
Yeah, in some places it is like that because Mexico's terrain is quite rough, really. It's quite deserty. But the point is, you know, they gave them food and water and shelter and then send them back, right? That's fine. But Joe Biden's like, right, well, I'm not just going to let these kids starve to death. No one's saying you should. No one's saying you should. We're just saying have a border. Don't let millions of 100,000 people in a month. You know, just don't do it. Just actually have a policy of sending them back. But Joe Biden's like, well, we're sending everyone back, but also we're catching and releasing. And it's like, well, what are you doing? Why are you telling them? Like, why is the media telling them, oh, Joe Biden's going to let you all in? You know, so send your unaccompanied sons and daughters. It's like, this is insane. Like, but Trump's messaging was very clear, and the migrants themselves were very, very convinced. Trump won't let us in, so we won't go. Joe Biden, you just said you won't let them in, so and you're telling them not to come, and then you say, well, we're going to make sure they can. Like, you're making the crisis worse for the mixed messaging. Yeah. Is the point.
It's because they've always wanted to push, we love migration for God knows what reason. Like, we just love illegal migration,
exactly.
Presumably because it gives us votes. And then you've come to government and you've realized, actually, this is bad.
Yeah, it's creating a massive crisis.
And people don't like it. Maybe it ought to look like I'm trying to stop it. Yeah. So you're just lying.
And those Honduran mothers are lying. And also they live knee-deep in filth because they're disgusting subhumans. Joe Biden 2021. You know, like, Joe, they're not living in filth. They think that you are okay with them coming and you should say that you're not. Very clearly, and you shouldn't be mealy-mouthed about it. But anyway, there were some really funny, bizarro moments, like this particular one.
Have you decided whether you are going to run for re-election in 2024? You haven't set up a re-election campaign yet, as your predecessor had by this time.
My predecessor needed to. My predecessor. Oh, God, I miss him.
Have you?
No, the answer is yes. My plan is to run for re-election. That's my expectation.
Do you believe you'll be running against former President Trump?
Oh, come on. I don't even think about it. I have no idea. I have no idea whether it'll be a Republican Party.
He thinks in the next 3 years, it might, I guess. I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. But let's be honest, the Republican Party isn't going to stop existing in the next 3 years, Joe. I don't know why you'd say that. And, oh, God, I miss Trump? What a bizarre statement.
He wasn't laughing when he said that either. Like, he was laughing, then stopped, then went, God, I miss Trump. I was like, okay.
And then it's like, I don't think about him at all. It's like, I think the lady doth protest too much. And then when he was questioned on the Republicans wanting voter integrity, things like, you know, voter IDs, not mail-in ballots, this is being framed
legitimate
by
votes.
Yeah,
they,
you know,
they want legitimate votes.
Citizens voting in elections. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have been hysterical about this and framing it as if this is essentially an attempt to abolish democracy by the Republicans because they don't want non-citizens voting, and they don't want them voting multiple times, and they don't want ballot harvesting or mail-in voter fraud or anything like that. And so it would make sense to actually fortify an election against that. And Joe Biden's response was level-headed.
I'm going to spend my time doing three things. One, trying to figure out how to pass the legislation passed by the House, number one. Number two, educating the American public. The Republican voters I know find this despicable. Republican voters, the folks out in the outside this White House, I'm not talking about the elected officials, I'm talking about voters. And so I'm convinced that we'll be able to stop this because it is the most pernicious thing. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. I mean, this is gigantic what they're trying to do. And it cannot be sustained. And do everything in my power, along with my friends in the House and the Senate, to keep that from becoming the law.
God, he really does look absent whenever he speaks, doesn't he?
Yeah, but why is he comparing voter integrity to Jim Crow?
Probably misses it back from when he was in government.
I mean, maybe.
He's old.
But it's not just Jim Crow, it's Jim Eagle. It's Jim Crow on steroids, basically. It's like, what? What, preventing illegal immigrants from voting in elections or from you know, whoever voting twice. That's Jim Crow.
There are different ballot boxes, illegal votes and legal votes. This is Jim Crow.
Yeah, look at this segregation that you've brought back, Mr. Trump. But yeah, so like it was just really bizarre. And yeah, you are right. He looks lost on practically every...
I feel like he had about two or three mood swings in the middle of that. It was weird.
Oh, there are loads. There are points, I should have clipped them really, but there were points where he's talking normally, he's talking normally, and then he gets very aggressive and then he goes back to talking normally. It's like, what are you doing, Joe? What's wrong with you?
It's strange.
Yeah. But anyway, so he was asked about China. How's his relationship with China? And will there be tariffs? Can you ban forced labor products? And he said this.
I've known Xi Jinping for a long time. Allegedly, by the time I left office as vice president, I had spent more time with Xi Jinping than any world leader had. Weird, he's right. One of the guys like Putin who thinks that autocracy is the wave of the future. Democracy can't function in an ever complex world. We had a 2-hour conversation. I made it clear to him again, what I've told him in person on several occasions, that we're not looking for confrontation, although we know there will be steep, steep competition.
Right. So he's spent more time with Xi Jinping than any other world leader. And he spends 2 hours on the phone. Hi, Xi. How are you doing? Yeah, I'm just getting my hair done. Right? And then he essentially effectively surrenders to China. Oh, we don't want confrontation.
So the charitable interpretation, because I've heard it from like Voltaire's ghost video trying to put down, like if you're in central government, it would be irresponsible to just say, we're at war. You want to not go down that route. You want to go into that route without saying it.
Yeah.
But I'm not optimistic. So there's the argument that competition is secretly, we're going to recognize we're basically in a rival state and we need to beat them.
Yeah.
But I'm not optimistic that he actually believes that.
We'll get to that in a minute. But I just find it interesting. It's like, look, you're dealing with a man that you describe as an autocrat, right? And he also, we're talking about essentially a fascist dictatorship that's undergoing a genocide. And Joe Biden's like, well, we don't want a confrontation with you. We're going to compete with you. It's like, okay, well, how are you going to compete with what is effectively a slave economy? What are you going to do? You can pay your workers the same amount that Chinese laborers get, are you?
We'll pay them even less than nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you
take money off them as they work?
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you have something more firm on that? But I guess if you're there on your bed with your legs kicking in the air going, hi, Z, for 2 hours every night, then maybe you wouldn't, you know. But anyway, so what's it going to do to hold China accountable? Let's see.
The second thing we're going to do is we're going to reestablish our alliances. And I've been very clear with them. It's not anti-Chinese. We have to have democracies working together. Before too long, I'm going to invite an alliance of democracies to come here to discuss the future. And so we're going to make it clear that in order to deal with these things, we are going to hold China accountable to follow the rules. And as long as you and your country continues to so blatantly violate human rights, we are going to continue in an unrelenting way to call to the attention of the world and make it clear what's happening. And he understood that and made it clear that no American president, at least one did, but no American president ever backed down from speaking out of what's happening to the Uyghurs. What's happening in Hong Kong? What's happening in country? That's who we are.
What a ridiculous statement. He's making it sound like Trump was weak on China.
But like, one president didn't speak out on Xinjiang and Hong Kong.
Which is obviously he's referring to Trump, right?
But Trump did, so are you saying
Yeah, and it was Trump's administration, Pompeo, at the very end. He was like, no, look, this is a genocide. China's evil. You know, Trump the whole time, China, 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 China. Like, and then Joe Biden's like, oh yeah, Trump weak on China. One president didn't do this, but we're going to do this. It's
you could blame Nixon. What? But what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe he was referring to Nixon, but the thing is, he refers to Trump obsessively whenever he talks about the thing that America did wrong is that Trump did this thing wrong. I mean, he did the same with the border stuff. He was like, well, Trump dismantled all of the good stuff we had at the border. It's like, oh, did he? Okay. I mean, why did you stop the wall? But anyway, right. So, but the thing is, listen to what he said, right? So he's going to take the dictator of a fascist genocidal dictatorship And he assumes it's equally as valid as Western democracies. And his plan is to simply point out in an unrelenting way to the world that they're the bad guys and they're committing genocide. Okay. And they're going to go, sure.
We don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
Nene Frega.
You're a fascist. Fascist. Yes. Yeah. Like, what did you think the fascist was going to say? You know?
And now we're taking over this country. You know, like, like, they don't care. He's not threatening them with anything. It's the most toothless thing I've ever seen. So we're going to tell people what China's doing. Everyone already knows. Like, everyone knows what China's doing.
I mean, the only optimistic part I saw in there was him talking about an alliance. I mean, if you could set up a ring of alliances from India to Japan to try and take away Chinese trade, I mean, sure, everyone agrees with doing something like that to take away their power.
Why don't you just embargo them then?
But then why is your speech not like that? Why is your speech like, no, we're going to be anti-China here. We need to make sure we take away their power.
I mean, he makes, in a bit I didn't clip, he makes it very clear that he recognizes China as being just essentially as equally valid as a Western democracy. And it's really bizarre. And it's like, okay, but you're toothless. We're going to tell people that China are bad. Yeah, but you're going to allow them to take all the trade.
No, you need to refer to them as an axis of evil or pirate state or something like this.
But you could literally say, look, while China is engaging in a genocide, US companies will be forbidden from purchasing or manufacturing goods in China. And it's like, that would be massive.
Yeah.
That would be A, what are you going to do? Argue against it? You got no, oh, well, actually, if a little bit of genocide's okay if we get cheap tat from China, isn't it? You'd be like, no, it's not. No amount of genocide is okay. And until China can prove they stopped it, that's it. And then, but that, what?
Did you see Hugo Boss this morning?
No.
So they,
what did they have to say about this?
Hugo Boss, of all companies, were in trouble.
So what did they say?
They made a statement to Western outlets in Europe and America saying, we don't use 1 inch of cotton from Xinjiang in any of our products. And then they were caught the same day bragging on Chinese social media that they love China and therefore they use Xinjiang cotton because it's the most high quality. It was like,
I guess I would expect that from the company that designed the Nazis' uniforms.
Yeah, but it's the same with Disney. It's the same with the rest of them. So you have to have the state step in there and be like, no,
because
you can't be trusted.
They're not ethical actors. They're amoral actors. They're there for money. They don't care that, you know, the Chinese are a genocidal regime that are tyrannical totalitarians who are expanding outwards, right? And they're fueling it by giving the Chinese money, right? It's like, there are things they could do. These would be massive changes. And it would be huge. Like, you can actually put pressure on China and be like, look, we are the source of your wealth and that will go away. You know, if you keep genociding, this is, as you know, Joe Biden says, oh, we're for human rights. It's like, dude, just simply saying something is toothless. It does nothing. The Chinese do not care. They're not going to change. And Biden will do nothing about them because he's been paid off by them. Anyway, the response to this from the media has been mixed, actually. There have been some outlets that have been mildly critical, and we say mildly as in, you know, they pointed out that Joe Biden didn't have an answer for absolutely everything. And then you have the Jennifer Rubin response in the New York Times. This is amazing. Sorry, the Washington Post. What's the difference between them? Washington Post and New York Times are basically the same thing. Biden excels at his first news conference. The media embarrass themselves. Yes, Jennifer, go after the media. Wait, you are the media. Like, who? What? What's happening here?
I am not worthy to be in the same room as Emperor Biden.
Well, it is literally Pravda-esque levels of subservience here. After weeks of whining, the White House press corps got its first official Biden news conference on Thursday. Weeks of whining, okay? The president isn't supposed to do press conferences, I guess. President Biden used the event to blah, 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 blah. Try as they might seem tough, the media did not succeed in knocking Biden off message. Biden spoke in great detail and length to show not only his mastery of the issues, but also to suck tension and conflict out of the room. The media did not distinguish themselves by asking asking about immigration multiple times and echoing the false narrative that Biden had created a surge. They showed they were more interested in soundbites than actual news. False narrative. It's just false. Pravda says so. Emperor Biden did nothing wrong. Amazing. But anyway, that's the Biden press conference from my perspective. Honestly, I expected him to kind of fall asleep halfway through, and so the fact that he managed to stand for an hour.
Kind
of
did.
Well, no. The fact that he managed to stay standing up and answering their questions for an hour is better than I expected. His answers were terrible. Like, they were like, yeah, okay, it's a low bar, but like, his answers.
This is so, like, low bar.
Sure. And his answers were terrible.
At least President Obama didn't himself this morning.
I guess so, you know. But yeah, he's not. He's going to do nothing about China. He's going to get a bunch of Western countries to go, hey, that's not right, that's not nice, and threaten them with nothing.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is why I'm not optimistic. I saw, Voltaire's Ghost, I keep referencing it because I think it's the best form of the argument where he's like, look, I have my doubts as well, but here's my optimistic view of what the people he's bringing in and not him himself.
Yeah.
But still then, I just don't see it in the rhetoric at all. There doesn't seem to be any drive to try and actually see China as an enemy that needs to be conquered.
Right, but instead, too long on the phone with them, I imagine.
It seems more like they see them as a competitor, as in like, you know, they're a sort of friend we can work with, and haha, isn't it funny how we're both trying to battle for supreme global supremacy?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not funny. No. Like, this is a big deal.
Really don't want China to win.
Like, should genocide be a global norm? Because that's what a Chinese global supremacy looks like.
Well, Joe Biden will point it out that it shouldn't be. Thank goodness. I mean, that's a very brave first step. And maybe if only the US had, I don't know, a military or something that they could do to prevent a genocide with, that would be amazing. But I guess Joe Biden's hands are just tied. There's just nothing he can do.
I guess there's nothing he can do.
Also, the stacks will just keep coming in. Anyway, how are things going in Old Blighty?
So I wanted to play some clips first for some context about all of this. So we in England have had a huge problem with dealing with Islamic fundamentalism because we just refuse to accept that it exists by the looks of it. So you remember we've had huge...
So we're taking the Joe Biden approach to dealing with the problem.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some good things over the years, but mostly bad. Mm. But the cartoons one is the most interesting one for me because... our Prime Minister has been able to point out, unlike Barack Obama in his day, that Islamic extremism comes from Islam. But there are other parts where we are pathetic. And the most pathetic, I think, is on cartoons and freedom of expression. Because there's this sort of political attitude in the UK that anything offensive isn't really worthy of politics. Mm. And everything has to be prim and proper. And it means that anything offensive, we just sort of throw under the bus.
Mm.
And whenever the cartoon crisis came up, in every instance in which it's happened, Britain kowtowed. And the worst offender being Charlie Hebdo, in my view. So this is a clip from Sky News in which they're trying to talk around Charlie Hebdo. But at the time, for context, every British media outlet that was mainstream did not publish the cartoons. They refused to. Like, all the French did, because it was like, well, what are you going to do? Shoot us all. And that's the correct way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
But we immediately just kowtow to Sharia. You know, ISIS, you are right. We will censor the cartoons.
Based France stands up to Islamo-leftism.
Yeah, so this French person here actually tries to show up Sky News and just to see how bad everything is.
I can't
is.
Believe we're being shown up by the French.
Yeah, let's play.
Is this, which is completely crazy, that in UK you cannot show a simple drawing as that. So
with Mohammed at Sky News, we've chosen not to show that cover, so we would appreciate Caroline not showing that. I do apologise for any of our viewers who may have been offended by that. As you know, here in Sky News, we've taken the editorial decision not to feature the cover of Charlie Hebdo.
Okay, but I'm offended by that editorial decision. What now?
I mean, just like the cameraman lifting up the camera to point at the roof because he's like, no, we can't dare to insult Islam.
Yeah, we're a halal news station. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Sky News is owned by MSNBC, in case you're wondering, Americans. So that's how bad they are.
I wonder if GB News are going to be a halal news station.
They better be haram. Yeah. Anyway, but it's not just the media. Our mainstream politicians, particularly our prime ministers, have been pretty awful on this as well. Mm-hmm. Theresa May being the worst example. So I want to play some sections from a speech she gave to Conservative Party conference in which she's talking to Conservative members and they applauded this. Let's just play.
The terrorists who murdered David Haynes like to call themselves the Islamic State. But I will tell you the truth. They are not Islamic, and they are not a state.
That's right. I'm a conservative.
The Quran says, O mankind, we created you from a single pair of a male and a female, and made you into nations and tribes that ye may know each other. It says, let there be no compulsion in religion. So let this message go out from this hall. Let the message go out. But we know Islam caliphate. Is a religion of peace and it has nothing to do with the ideology of our enemies. Let us stand. Their actions have absolutely no basis in anything written in the Quran. What they believe has no resemblance whatsoever to the beliefs of more than a billion Muslims all over the world. This hateful ideology has nothing to do with Islam itself.
Imagine how that sounds in the Middle East. Sorry, there's a Western woman who's telling us that we're not real Muslims. So what does she know? Nothing.
Islamic extremism has nothing to do with Islam itself. I mean, Allahu Akbar, the chief scholar of the UK, is here to tell you that I've read the Quran, and no, it has nothing to do with Islam. Like, vote for the British Caliphate. We're the Conservatives, better than the alternative.
Like, she clearly doesn't know that Islam's 1,400 years old, and there's been actually a great amount of intellectual work that's gone into the paradigm of Islam.
No one with a bigger brain as Mrs. May here. Brothers and sisters, come and listen.
We Conservatives are the true Caliphate.
God, it's so bad, it's not even funny. Like, that's our leaders, and they've got Macron across the pond going, exactly. Islamo-leftism needs to die. It is crush a cancer it. To Western civilization. It's like...
Oh God, I'm chafed the front.
Yeah, that's one of our ex-prime ministers. I haven't heard... David Cameron wasn't much better. He always said that Islam is a religion of peace whenever he could find an awkward silence to fill. And luckily, Boris Johnson hasn't said anything on this, so I'm interested to see what he does when an issue pops up like that, which it has. So this is the...
Conversely, Boris is like, we're gonna put the letterboxes in their place.
So I expect him to be solid on this.
Yeah.
So this is the issue that we're talking about. So that for the context of how bad Britain is on this issue. So this is Batley Grammar School, which is a school that was founded in 1612. It's a 409-year-old school, which has been set up by a Christian back in the day in 1612.
Exactly the kind of Islamic school that the Conservatives are conserving.
Yes. So you can imagine what this purpose and its likeness was like in 1612. Mm. Well, now that we've had the wonders of mass immigration and the diversity that is our strength, we've had a bit of a change to the local population there. So if we can go to the next link. This is just some demographic data. So if we can scroll down a little bit so the lovely boys and girls can see... Sorry, scroll down on the right side so you can get the... statistics. So this is Batley West, so this is the western part of it, and you can see that 32% of the population identify themselves as Muslim, if you can scroll on some more, and then 32% of the population identify themselves as Asian. So probably the Asian population there, just for context, in England we call people from the Indian subcontinent Asian, God knows why. So probably the Pakistani, Bangladeshi people there. With 12% born outside of the UK and EU, so overwhelmingly probably Pakistan by the guest of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's Batley East, which is a bit more extreme than 32% of the population being Asian Muslim. This one has 55% Muslim, 54% Asian. So majority Muslim, majority Asian, with 19.5% born outside of the UK.
So it's one of those areas of the UK that the English are in the minority in their own city.
In this constituency here, the other one being pretty close at 30%.
Yeah.
And to keep in mind, this data is from 2011. So 10 years have passed since then.
Looking forward to this year's census.
Going to be interesting. So there is a school, that school I mentioned, is on the border between these two constituencies. Mm-hmm. And the school itself has some interesting data. So if you want to scroll down as well to the ethnic part here. So they say in here that 30% of the students have English not as a first language. So... What is that like?
And again, this was in 2011.
Yeah. And then if you scroll down even further, just the ethnic part, 23.5% of the pupils identify as white British. That's the majority group of the UK, being 23% there. And the majority group in this school is Pakistani at 29.3%, referencing themselves as Pakistani. So overwhelmingly a Pakistani-dominated school, by the sounds of it, in a Pakistani-dominated area. Just saying, that's what it is.
Okay, good context.
What did you think would happen in an area like this where the population is becoming more and more Islamic? Well, we'd institute Sharia, because why wouldn't we? So let's get the next link from Andy Ngo. So this is a protest outside that school, because there was apparently a teacher who dared to blaspheme. He dared to take some Muhammad cartoons in a religious education lesson about blasphemy and showed them the cartoons to say, this is blasphemy in Islam.
This is going to turn into a Samuel Paty situation, isn't it?
This is exactly what Samuel Paty did, and then he was beheaded. So the school did this. They showed the cartoons, apparently, and then a gang of Muslim men decided to come outside. I don't know how many of them have students there. I'm just going to assume they do, for the sake of argument. So they're all upset that their kids have been shown an image of Muhammad, which I don't care.
I can see that they're very well integrated with the local population by taking on the local Yorkshire dress, which is a long thobe.
Well, you can't actually blame them for not being integrated with the local population. They are. They're integrated with the local population that is overwhelmingly Pakistani.
Yeah, they are the local population. Right?
So what are you complaining about?
I suppose so.
The,
so.
The protest took place here. The teacher has issued a hostage statement. So we can get the next image up. Just show you him standing there. Presumably this is how it went down. And he said that he was suspending all religious education teaching until an independent inquiry into the teaching had taken place to determine if something had gone wrong. He'd also suspended the teacher for being a blasphemer and then apologized to the Islamic community for offending Islam. And that was his hostage statement. Please don't cut my head off. Yeah, good. I love living in England. What a wonderful place. And then the Islamist lobby is also saying that that's not really enough. So this is one of them calling for the suspension of the teacher before it had been announced. So you can see here, this is Roshan M. Salah, a representative of Five Pillars.
Batley Grammar School did the right thing by apologizing for one of its teachers who showed blasphemous images of the Prophet to Muslim pupils. The UK should not become a hate-filled anti-Muslim country like France. The teacher now needs to be suspended or sacked. Why stop there? Is there any other precedent that we could apply to this teacher for showing a cartoon of a Prophet Muhammad?
I'm sure. I wonder what the Sharia says.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you are an Islamist, so, I mean, who else are you going to appeal to for the correct punishment other than the Quranic texts and the Islamic laws that come with
it? So, literally, you're not allowed to blaspheme against Islam now.
But I love the idea that France is an anti-Muslim country because they believe in free speech. Like, when the Charlie Hebdo cartoonist got killed, the overwhelming mood in France by politicians and the culture was, no, we will not give up this right. We are allowed to draw Muhammad. Mm. And then so on and so forth, even with all the murders and terrorist attacks. You can see even Emmanuel Macron saying Islamo-leftism is evil and needs to be purged from our country.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad they learned the lesson. But apparently, no, that's anti-Muslim hatred for demanding liberalism. So
let's assume it is. What do we sacrifice? Do we sacrifice Islam or do we sacrifice liberalism?
That's the decision all of the West has to make.
Yeah, and Britain has made its choice.
England made the wrong choice, or at least this school did. So this school's head teacher decided to cuck on it. So let's get the next link. This is our reporting from lotuseaters.com, so you can read the full information there, but I'm just going to gloss over a few bits. So this is him being suspended for daring to blaspheme in a class about blasphemy. And he mentions at the end here, if you go to the bottom, there's a tweet from, I can't remember, what is it, Britain Group or whatever?
Like the traditional Britain Group. Yeah,
they got a post here. So this is an Islamic charity deciding to ramp up the pressure on this whole situation. And in here, you can see they've had to censor some parts because they mentioned the name of the teacher in question multiple times.
Really? That's weird. It's almost like they are doing the same thing as what happened to Samuel Paty leading up to his execution.
It's not like they don't know that has happened.
Of course not.
They actively know it's happened. And they know they shouldn't name him, but they're like, we'll just drop in the names, see what happens.
Wouldn't it be a shame if something terrible happened to this particular teacher who we're going to name over and over and over and over?
Yeah, and you can see in there, they're also referencing genocide. They're equating his actions here, showing a cartoon to students about blasphemy with an image of blasphemy. They're equating that to a genocide and saying that the genocide will only increase if we allow this behavior to continue.
What?
It's just like, what are you talking about? Like, is that a threat? I don't know how else to take that.
So if we don't all accept the Sharia, then Muslims are being genocided.
Yes. That's their argument, which, I mean, Jesus Christ.
So Macron is right, just saying.
That's the Islamist lobby.
I'm going to get a poster of Macron's shining face up behind me. Like, just Macron, have you seen, like, the picture of, like, Zarathustra, the Zoroastrian ones, where he's looking up to the heavens and he's glowing and there's light all around him? I'm going to get that for Macron.
Macron rising to paradise on a winged horse.
the Jupiterian presidency rising, you know, because if it's that or this, then give me that, man.
Yeah, I have seen Voltaire's ghost response to this as well. There's him saying that he's actually going to move to France. I imagine he's not joking as well, because he's very...
Bonjour! Welcome to the podcast of Les Lotus Eaters.
I mean, honestly, where are we in a position to complain here? Britain's better than France. I mean,
no,
really?
No, we're not. They're kicking our asses.
So this is the argument from the Islamist lobby. They managed to get one of the representatives from the, let's say, Irritated Fathers Brigade.
Is he from a cave in Syria?
So he gives his argument here. Okay. Let's just play the argument from them.
The head teacher has written to everybody, and yet there are still protests.
I've not had a personal response myself. However, we have seen that the teacher has been in question, has been suspended, and there's been an apology from the headmaster. However, we've not had an apology from the teacher, which speaks volumes. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, suspension isn't enough. I mean, this type of sadistic behavior in a classroom with children should not be accepted. The context was there was a cartoon shown of the Prophet, peace be upon him, with a bomb on his turban. And I think the teacher was trying to make an example of teaching blasphemy and a ridiculous way of teaching a subject by insulting 2 billion Muslims around the world. Let's put this in frank terms. Had this been a comment made against the LGBT group or anti-Semitic group, and quite rightly so, I must add, you know, we would, the teacher would have been, and it's happened before, people have lost their jobs. So why are we expecting, why are we treating the Muslims differently? All we want is justice. And, you know, people seem to be abusing the rights of freedom of speech.
Unreal. I mean, the bit where he says, what is it, that's not enough or something.
The teacher hasn't apologised, so we need him to bow down. And a suspension isn't enough for such sadistic behaviour.
I mean, what is enough then? Like, what has to happen to him? And they want justice for something that's not a crime.
It's a crime in Islam. And there's a punishment given in Islam for such crimes.
God, I'm really looking forward to the Conservatives publicly executing this teacher.
I mean, God know what he's saying in between the lines there, but let's get this image up. So this is him, what he's referencing here. So he said that there was a image of Muhammad with a bomb in his turban.
Yeah, that's now, from the Danish cartoonist.
Yeah, I've seen almost everyone trying to say that this is Charlie Hebdo, and loads of people in talk radio and whatnot as well. And I don't know why they're forgetting, but no, that image, if you go to the next
there was
one
a Danish
well.
Cartoonist who drew Muhammad and was murdered by a Muslim.
So this was an event where you drew Muhammad and one of them drew it like this. And then there were global riots in which Muslim governments allowed their communities, because protests aren't normally allowed in these countries.
Yeah.
All of a sudden they were allowing them to start rioting and burning down Danish embassies. Yeah. And a lot of people ended up dying because of intolerance from the Muslim governments there. So that's what they're referencing. That's the offensive thing. That's the thing that deserves him to get suspended, because he was like, hey, I'm going to teach you about blasphemy. This image here is blasphemy in Islam. And they're like, no, that's not allowed. It was like, well, if you used an image of blasphemy in Christianity, that would be fine. There'd be no complaints. But Islam gets a special privilege in our society.
Yeah. Or any other religion.
And the other point at the end there,
the only thing you could compare it to was our actual official state religion, which is the LGBT lobby.
Exactly. So the point he made at the end there, which he compared it to, was like, well, look, you in Britain have blasphemy laws against SJWs. We deserve the same rights as all of the SJWs in this country and have blasphemy laws against our religion as well. And he's not wrong.
Yeah. So we got Boris was like, that's right, I'm a conservative.
So the next link here is just section 127, just for anyone who's forgetting, in which it is a crime for a person is guilty of an offence if he sends by means of a public communication electronics a message or other matter which is grossly offensive. And there was one Northern Irish pastor who said that Islam was satanic online and ended up getting taken to court over it. Luckily, he was acquitted, but that is a real case.
Sorry, your theological arguments are null and void, and you have been fined one credit for a violation of the verbal morality statute.
Yeah, and not even just to talk about the law. I mean, the Conservatives, if you're watching, get rid of this. This isn't hard. Like, if you want to argue for free speech, number one, there you go, done. And then no one has this argument of Muslims deserve the same rights as SJWs.
Yeah, then everyone has the same rights, which is free speech.
But let's go away from the law for a second. That's how bad this country is. We have to argue about state law being censorious. But the cultural part he made there, well, if a teacher had said something about SJW propaganda, then he'd be fired. Yes, he would. So this is an Oxford teacher who was suspended for calling a student a she when they identified as a he. So he said to a group of pupils, well done, girls, despite one of the group identifying as male. And he got suspended for that because he had blasphemed against LGBT propaganda. I mean, it's just how dare he? How dare he say well done, girls, to a group of girls and one girl who identifies as a male? He's not wrong. The Muslims here are not wrong. If they're going to say, look, under British law, you have special privileges for blasphemy against SJW nonsense, we deserve the same privileges. What's the argument? We don't have one. Our civilization is pathetic. Sorry, I can't get over it. Like, we've given up everything. We have no leg to stand on in this regard until we get rid of this stuff. So, and then there's the Conservatives. So this is, Darren Grimes trying to give an argument here. So it's a bit of a tepid Conservative, but he's giving the argument that we should have such rights. So him saying here,
Darren Grimes, maybe Theresa May's wrong and we shouldn't be the seat of the global caliphate.
Yeah, we don't have blasphemy laws in Britain. Darren, that's a lie. We do.
Yeah, we
sorry.
Do, Darren.
I don't know if you're unaware, but that's the case. Teachers are free to explore religions and themes. No, they're not. Our school mustn't be intimidated into submission or daring to do so. I agree with that part. I agree that we should live in a free country, but too bad. Too bad. This is all Islamophobia. according to Dr. Shola. Dr. Shola has something to say about this.
Oh, she's come to berate the evil white man for his evil white ways.
So this is the lady they have on GB News all the time.
No, sorry, Good
GM,
Morning Britain.
Good Morning Britain, to just complain that Britain is bad. So her response to him here...
Shut up, Piers, you're a racist, Piers. Oh, thanks, Shola. Appreciate that.
So him saying we don't have blasphemy laws in Britain. This is Islamophobia couched as freedom of speech. Are you figuring this out now, Darren? We don't have these rights. We do have blasphemy laws. They're just on the basis of SJW language.
Mm.
It's not Western liberalism to draw a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, which is against Muslim beliefs.
What?
And you don't need to teach kids about Islam in a religious education class. It's not Western liberalism to have the freedom to insult Islam.
Amazing.
What a take. Well, and then you don't have to teach kids about Islam in a religious education class.
I don't really take Dr. Shola's view on this very seriously because as far as I'm concerned, she's a communist.
But this is the mainstream Labour Party view.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing to keep in mind. Even but,
as far as I'm concerned, they're communists too.
Even as I show you Theresa May saying we should set up the British Caliphate, the opposition here is like, well, I thought we were already there. So that's what we're dealing with.
Mashallah.
Telling Muslims to stuff it if they don't like it, that is Western liberalism, is reprehensible.
Well, to you maybe, but I'm assuming that you're a Muslim. Like, I don't care if Muslims don't like it, and I don't see why I should be forced to care.
Western liberalism is non-negotiable.
Yes.
It's that simple.
Like, I just don't believe in Allah and Muhammad being the seal of the prophets. I'm sorry, Dr. Shola. It is actually permissible under Western liberalism for some people not to be Muslims.
For how long?
Not very long,
there we go.
As far as the Conservatives are concerned.
Speaking of how far the Conservatives are concerned, let's talk about a former chairman of the Conservative Party, Baroness Warsi. So let's go up the next one. So this is her trying to defend the whole situation. A religious education teacher taught blasphemy by using an image of the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. Again, you don't know anything. Bombers a turban. Yep, that's not the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. This, according to parents at the school, created a hostile atmosphere which led to Islamophobic discourse and language.
Based.
So, teacher saying, here's what blasphemy is. Here's an image of the blasphemy to teach you what blasphemy is. It's Islamophobic of you.
Good.
Shut it down.
Sounds exciting.
But then she goes on to argue that this whole issue is not about freedom of speech versus Islamist terror, but instead about child safeguarding. That we must safeguard children from bullying in this court, in the playground, because the other students who have learnt about blasphemy will call them a terrorist. It's like just nonsense.
I think if you start terrorizing them because of blasphemy, then they might do it.
Yeah, she also goes on to argue.
I noticed that she spells Islamophobic wrong. So Islamaphobic or Islamophobic? Which one is it?
Who cares?
No, no one cares. But, I just find it interesting is that I take the subject really seriously. I just can't spell the word that I'm complaining about.
Yeah.
Let's carry on.
This is the kind of person who will hold open the gates for the barbarians.
She
references in here that, well, couldn't he have taught blasphemy in a way without blaspheming, without showing the cartoon?
Why should we?
It's like, how do you even do that? You fucking idiot. Like, sorry, swear. But it's just like, I'm going to teach you about blasphemy, but I can't show you what blasphemy is.
See, there's a blank space here. Now imagine.
Like, you're going to hold up a piece of blank paper and go, this is Muhammad.
Yeah, but that might be like, whoa, he said that was a picture of Muhammad. He's just a really bad artist.
And then Muslims all around the world are burning the printing paper. It's just so stupid, man. I can't get over it. But also, it's also doubly stupid because there's a lot of people trying to compare this, like, oh, but you wouldn't show anti-Semitic cartoons. It's like,
yeah, what?
Yeah, we do. We do, actually, in the history class to show you what the Nazis thought of the Jews. So don't give me this poppycock. I don't know what the...
I like offensive things. Like, that's the thing. Like, I like seeing offensive cartoons about anything. One of my favorite things, in fact, that's... We've got an image down there that I found in the Netherlands when I was on holiday in Amsterdam before we were crushed by COVID. And it's not a very flattering picture of Britain. It's a caricature of all the nations of Europe.
People can't see it.
But it's a caricature of all the nations of Europe drawn in the national style of, you know, whoever the artist believes. Yeah, I'm aware that we're running short on time. But it's really good. It's, you know, it doesn't paint Britain in a very good light, but that's fine. It's fun. Yeah. It's bands.
So then we call on the moderate Muslims, the totally moderate Muslims who have no ties to people who want to kill people who blaspheme at all. So this is the first one here, Mohammed Shafiq. So Mohammed Shafiq, the guy who got Tommy Robinson banned from Facebook, incidentally, he had what was it, like a 4 a.m. meeting in which he just lied to Facebook about Tommy Robinson.
Yep.
And then he got kicked. I should be calling him Lord Voldemort, but oh well. what's done is done. But this man has also got ties to organizations which literally call for the death of blasphemers in Pakistan, happily goes to their events.
And he's also a paper reviewer for BBC Five Live.
Yeah, and he's a perfectly moderate Muslim who can be trotted out to say that, no, this is, you just need to insult my religion in a, what is he says here, in a respectful way. So it's like, you can criticize Islam as long as it's on Islamic terms.
Yeah, no.
That's not freedom.
That's not how it works.
Absolute idiot. So if we can go to the next one, this is Stephen Knight's article in which he documents Mohammed Shafiq's extremism, in case you're interested in it. But we're going to skip over because we don't have time.
Stephen Knight doing the Lord's work, incidentally.
Yeah, so the Muslim Council of Britain have also endorsed the Islamist position here, because of course they do. And then the Labour MP has said nothing, because why would she? Why would she get involved?
She's wearing a hijab. Why would she say a thing?
I mean, you looked at those demographic statistics. Remember, that's 2011. Is she going to get re-elected if she comes out against this?
I mean, you're going to have to kind of go pro-caliphate, aren't you?
So that's that. But the Conservatives are in government at the moment, so not the former chairman nor former prime ministers, have come out and said some things. And I'm glad that they're saying some things. I just don't think they're enough. But we'll play them. So the first one here is the housing secretary. So if he's a secretary in the cabinet, he'll be told by the cabinet, yes, you can go out and say this. So that means the cabinet have discussed this, or at least Boris has, and they think, yeah, we ought to be on the side of freedom here, which, small things, small pleasures in life. So let's just play it.
This is a country based on free speech, and teachers should be able to tackle difficult and controversial issues in the classroom, and issues shouldn't be censored. And secondly, and most importantly, it's absolutely unacceptable for teachers and staff in our schools to be threatened or intimidated. We need to ensure that there is tolerance and respect, but I was troubled by the scenes I saw outside the school gates in Batley. We don't want to see those coming to work in our schools, children or parents feeling threatened or intimidated when they're coming into school just because a difficult issue has been tackled in the classroom.
And of course, it's also a great concern, the reports that the teacher at the heart of this is having police protection, Secretary of State.
Yes, I was very troubled to hear that. Because that's
do something.
Reminiscent of the scenes that we saw in France earlier in the year. We don't want to go down that route. Of course, a teacher shouldn't have to go into hiding in this country because of something they may have done or said in the classroom.
Then what are you doing about it?
But that's only because we know what happens. We know what happens if they don't. You get some conspiracy theory or lies that are promoted in the Muslim community, and then some lunatic travels all the way down from like Normandy or something and then beheads the guy in the street after paying people to show him who the guy was.
But sorry, I can't get over this. Like the
God damn it.
Conservative secretary here. Like, I'm glad he's saying we should be on the side
of freedom. Well, we should.
But sorry, this party has been in charge for what, like almost 10 years?
And
you're the ones like, oh, we shouldn't live in a country like this. Well, who's made it like this?
Yeah.
You guys have the power to stop the immigration from countries that believe that blasphemy should be a death penalty sentence, and yet you don't stop that. You don't take the actions of getting rid of blasphemy laws against SJW nonsense. So I'm sorry, I'm sort of out of patience with that thing. There was another Conservative MP who said something, but we'll skip over that.
Who's doubtless tepid and pro-caliphate.
Yeah, well, he was pro-freedom as well. Was it Sir Swade? I can't remember his first name. But he's good, nice, okay, but, you know, do things. Like, do the things that need to be done to make the country not how it is. Because how it is unbearable.
Well, the thing you've got to do... sustainable. The thing you've got to do is explain to the Muslim community in Britain that they just have to deal with it.
Yes.
They just have to deal with it. That's the point of other people having human rights. Well, also, and one of those human rights being freedom of speech.
Because I am sorry, but if you keep importing people who believe that blasphemy should be the death penalty, to the point where we have constituencies of over 50% of groups of people who would believe such a thing.
Yeah.
What do you think was going to happen?
Obviously. But the thing is... They just have to understand that the state, the government, and all of the apparatus of the society around them is permissive of pictures of the Prophet Muhammad. And if they don't like that, then there are options.
Literally go back to Pakistan.
Yeah, you've got options. I mean, that has blasphemy laws.
There are plenty of blasphemy law countries in the world you could visit.
Yeah, and you can live in. But this just is not one of them, and you shouldn't be upset or be surprised by that.
Yeah. The last thing to mention, so we'll skip over this instead, was just that on talk radio they had the same guy on from the spokesman of the Muslims who was continually asked by Julia Hartley Brewer here that is it worse to have someone beheaded for showing an image of the Prophet or to show an image of the Prophet? And he had to be asked this 5 times before he said, yeah, okay, maybe beheading someone is worse than showing a cartoon. It's just
wow. I'm amazed.
At least he got to there, you know.
Okay, great. Good start.
But that's Mohammed. The absolute state of this country. So if you want to load the next links, that's what we should do. But
I mean, that's a good start. So anyway, right, let's clear my throat. And then let's quickly give ourselves a summary of what the last year under lockdown has been like. And it's been kind of awful. But now the coronavirus is essentially a problem that the Conservative Party have solved. We're down to like double-digit deaths per day within 28 days of a coronavirus test. It seems that the Conservative Party, as we said yesterday, can take the win on this, but they refuse to do so for some reason. And they've decided to extend their COVID powers that were only for 1 year for another 6 months. This has gone through the House of Commons with a massive margin because the Labour Party have voted for this as well, obviously thinking, well, at some point the Conservatives will be out of government and we'll have these unbelievable powers that we'll have to be able to take advantage of. Right. And so this passed with a 484-76 margin. That 76 being a handful of Conservatives that are just like, wait, are we meant to be a totalitarian state that allows the government to take control of every aspect of people's lives and forcibly vaccinate them with stuff? Maybe not, because we're Conservatives. Like, I'm sorry I'm overusing that meme, but seriously, I'm just so sick of the Conservatives.
It's so true.
It's so true.
Good on the 76 people doing this, but...
Yeah.
My God.
Bravo. The 76 people who are like, you know what, I don't think indefinite tyranny is good. I think maybe we need to vote against that. Like, but anyway, right, so... I mean, like, here's Mark Harper, a leading lockdown skeptic, saying he had not heard a single good answer as to why the British government needed to extend the draconian powers for another 6 months. That's because there isn't one. Even the Liberal Democrats oppose this extension, right? And that explains why it's, you know, 76 rather than 75. That was a good joke.
I didn't get the reference.
No, the Lib Dems are a tiny marginal force. Don't worry. But anyway, Ed Davey said it gave ministers a blank check to use draconian powers they don't need. Yeah, that's right. They don't need these draconian powers. They've got a blank check for it. The Labour Party are in favour of it. Most of the Conservative Party are in favour of it. Why is it that Jeremy Corbyn has come out against this? Jeremy Corbyn said our liberties are at stake. Comrade Corbyn! Like, of all things... Like, Jeremy Corbyn's on the right side of an issue about liberty.
Chairman Mao's like, I'm not sure you should do this, Britain.
Exactly. Like, maybe. Anyway, so the question that's being debated now is that should you require a vaccine passport to go into a pub? That's where we are.
Deine Papier.
Yeah. Papers, please. Also, you don't have a picture of Mohammed, do you? Like, you've won. You beat the virus. You know, like on the previous thing, 28 million people have been vaccinated now. That's every elderly person. We're going into like the 50s and 40s. Like, what now? Everyone's safe. You've done it. The problem's solved. But anyway, MPs will apparently vote later on these new laws and because it's continuing through the process. Well, this was known from yesterday even. They did approve it. They essentially just continue as is. The review of the vaccine certification may coincide, blah, blah. Where was I looking for? Right, so it turns out that this review that they're doing... that is going to be a review into the vaccine certification, could report in May to coincide with the wider reopening of hospitality in England, which would be nice one day in the future. And the review is looking into whether people should have to prove whether they have been vaccinated as lockdown measures ease. Why?
So they're exploring whether or not to make this mandatory.
Yeah.
So my understanding at the moment, they want to make this a voluntary scheme for pubs.
Well,
so that's them testing the waters to see what response is.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully the response has been fairly good. And like, if they're even going to take away going to the pub, then Jesus. But the review is going into how this can be done, and basically they're thinking that you could have a vaccine passport that is on your phone as an app that you could display as you go into a pub or whatever. And when asked about pub goers being asked to provide the vaccine certificate, Boris Johnson was like, "Well, it may be up to the individual pubs. Why? Why have anything?" Like, if the vaccine works, then the problem goes away, and then we don't need it. There's no one in risk. What's the problem? But the view from Boris, very, very tepid. And it's weird that he's kind of opening up a gap here with which to go down this, because he says that we have had something similar to this in the past when it comes to vaccines for other things, much more dangerous diseases, in certain other areas of life. So it's like, right, okay, why would you want to leverage that into this not very dangerous disease that you have already defeated? But anyway, the responses were at least relatively good, because, like, we're going to go back to Boris very quickly, because there was one thing that he said that I find really interesting, and this perception that he has of the outside world. I mean, it's with the hepatitis B jabs. He was like, look, it's not alien to us that doctors already have to have these jabs and stuff like this. It's like, yeah, okay, great. So you've got one circumstance in which vaccines are mandatory because doctors need hepatitis B jabs so they don't infect patients or something. Does that mean that we need to have vaccine passports going into a pub? No, obviously, right? But Boris's view is this, right? He's like, I find myself in this long national conversation thinking very deeply about it. The public wants me as Prime Minister to take all the action I can to protect them. Do they?
What?
Do they?
We don't see you as God. Like, we're not Labour Party voters.
Who did you ask? It wasn't the Conservative base, was it?
No. Like, I mean, if you ask the Labour Party's, you know, supporters and activists, yeah, they see their leader as God who needs to protect them.
Yeah.
But if you ask any freedom-loving person, of course not.
No. And it's wild how he thinks he's leading the Labour Party. He seems to think that he has to turn himself into a tyrant, and this is probably how I'm going to refer to him from now on, the tyrant Boris, who thinks that he needs to enact COVID Sharia across the country because that's what the people demand. Comrade. So the people do not demand COVID Sharia at all, which is why you keep going on about people breaking lockdown. But anyway, the responses were at least fairly heartening. Jonathan Neame, the chief executive of the Shepherd Neame pub chain, said that his company would not insist on vaccines. Weatherspoon said the same, did they not?
Yeah, Tim Martin said that they will not do it if they are allowable, if they're allowed to say no. Great. If they are forced to, then they have to.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty bad business practice, really. Because if you've got every pub chain saying, yeah, we're going to turn away people without their vaccine passports, the single pub that says, no, we're going to let anyone in regardless, is going to get loads and loads of business and is going to crush the opposition.
Yeah, and anyone who has a vaccine is over the age of, what, 50, 40? So anyone under that age can't go to a pub. Yeah. And also, what happens if you want to bring your kids who don't need one?
Yeah, exactly. Or if you're a pregnant woman who's going to drink a non-alcoholic drink or have a meal or something like that, and your doctor has advised you not to have one.
It's a really well thought out piece of legislation.
Really well thought out. But anyway, Peter Marks, a nightclub owner from the Delta Group, said the vaccine certificate could work for the sector, but probably be accepted by customers already used to carrying IDs into venues. However, he was concerned about introducing such a measure as a delay of reopening a business. Well, I mean, I guess.
I should also mention, when Weatherspoons announced that they will not be instituting vaccine passports in their pubs, their stock went up.
Oh, good to know, yeah. Steve Baker, the touted libertarian backbench conservative MP that we hear so much about, but it's all just empty air as far as I'm concerned. Libertarian principles, okay, but we're currently living in a tyrannical state where we don't have free speech. Yeah, I guess he's only one man, but like, do something. I don't know. I don't even know what he's supposed to do, but just do something. Don't just sit there going, yeah, I don't approve of this. I don't approve of this. I don't approve of this. Yeah, well, it's all happening, isn't it, Steve? Anyway, he said, you know, first we'll need them to watch the football, and today it'll be the papers for the pub. You know, where does this end? We must not fall into this ghastly trap. What do you mean, we must not fall? We're there. Like, we're currently, everything's closed. Like, this would be an improvement in our liberty if we were given vaccine passports to go to the pub. That's how sad the state is in Britain at the moment. At the moment, no pub, but it could be that if you get the right papers, you could go to the pub. That would be an improvement.
Dana Papier, bitte.
It really is. It's Soviet Britain. The Soviet Caliphate of Britain. Oh, God, I hate it so much.
Like, literally Islamo-leftist island.
Yes. Literally Islamo-leftist island. And there's base Macron across the continent going, you know, down with Islam, down with leftism. It's like, how did that happen? Boris, you were the guy BTFOing the anarcho-syndicalist fringe and the letterboxes.
I love people in the chat are like, well, we can vote for something else. I honestly feel like we might all just have to put in the other category next time and be like Macron.
Macron elected Prime Minister of Britain. How did this happen? Yeah, good question. But that's the point. We can vote for something else. Well, what? You know, what are we going to vote for? And how would we get the public to get that on board? Because they're just going to be like, well, it's either blue or red. because I'm someone who doesn't pay attention to politics and I'm happy being oppressed. Really, I hate it. And the main thrust against this from the Conservatives is, well, it might be discriminatory. Oh, really? That's the objection, is it? Discrimination.
It might violate the Equality Act. God, yes. We need to abolish that act. We don't care about it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's against human rights. It's against your personal liberties. It's against freedom. You know, the concept that the English invented in England that no longer exists, that would have been the thing that I would have appealed to, not the communist, it makes us unequal. Like, that's the thrust of their objection, and it's disgraceful. It might prevent pregnant women from taking part in society. Our individual liberties have been abolished? Like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, anyway, so, yeah, Nick Ferrari was on the radio at least spitting some facts over this. True facts, in fact. He said, I told you before there'll be no end to this. If I told you a little over 12 months ago that in 12 months' time it will be floated to you that you need a special passport to be allowed to go into the pub, you would have laughed at me. Well, good point. They probably would. And now here we are, because there is no end to it. It's a continue. The slippery slope is not a fallacy. It's a prophecy. It goes and goes and goes until we're now discussing. God.
All right, I'm predicting it now. Tinder passports.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm not getting that goddamn vaccine. Boris kind of wobbled on this, thankfully. I guess that's something. I mean, like, because literally everyone was like, Boris, that's a terrible idea. Even Jeremy Corbyn is like, is this a good idea? Even Jeremy Corbyn's against you, Boris.
The anarcho-syndicalist front is like, hang on a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be liberty. But this is the thing, Boris, why do you think the entire country is expecting you to save everyone from death? No one thinks that's your job.
Bunker.
It's bizarre. But anyway, so Boris, the compromise that Boris came out with is, I can solve this conundrum, I can square this circle. How about we don't have any vaccine passports until all people in Britain have been offered the jab? What? So if you've been offered the jab and you don't have a passport because you didn't take it, you can't go to the pub. Thanks, Boris. I hate it. Thank you. Thank you for this absolutely awful compromise solution. It's like, you shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. This is bad. This is immoral. It makes you a tyrant. Right. So he said he was trying to take the heat out of the growing backlash and said, I do think it's going to be a role for certification. There is going to be a role for certification. There are lots of difficult issues because there are some people who, for medical reasons, can't get a vaccination. Pregnant women can't get it. And you've got to be careful about how you do this. You might only be able to implement a thoroughgoing vaccine passport scheme, even if you wanted such a thing, in the context of when absolutely everybody's been offered a vaccine. Well, then rule it out, Boris. Rule it out. We don't do it if it's unworkable. There's if we can't appeal to the practical, the moral argument of the state of English, historic English liberties, can we at least argue from the practical position of you can't do it? You know, but no, instead, we're going to be like, well, we're just going to have to wait until everyone's been offered it, and then we'll do it. So what happens to the pubs until then? Until everyone has been given the vaccine in England? Like, do you not have the pubs open? It's just, sorry, not my problem.
Well, they're not right now.
They're not right now, so what, things won't change. Obviously, the business and backbenchers have opposed this, and even a scientist has come out against this. Even the scientists. Sir Jeremy Farrar, a top scientist, apparently, has said it crosses the line of individual freedoms and public health. Right, there we go. We've got the scientists arguing from ethics. Now it's individual freedoms coming out of the mouths of the scientists going, hang on a second, screw the science. Like, we're talking about the basic moral content of our public life here. It's like, yeah, that's right, we are. And that's the discussion we should have had right at the very beginning. You know, this should never have got to this position. But anyway, like, and aside from the fact that it just factually will do nothing, it doesn't change a damn thing. Like, again, they've vaccinated all of the vulnerable people. So yeah, the senior Tory Sir Robert Sims, MP for Poole, said it's bonkers, good. And in reality, it just won't happen because pubs and businesses will open up to everyone. Well, I hope so. And Peter Bone, another Tory MP, says a vaccine passport is about making people show papers and certificates. It goes against all of our freedoms. Why on earth would we show papers to have a pint when we're all being vaccinated? So it seems that he's almost kind of agreeing with Boris there. It's like, well, once everyone's had it, we won't need it. It's like, we don't need it now. And the pubs could be open now. But anyway, so that's the disgraceful state of Britain. Disgraceful state of America as well. God, sorry, we didn't have a white pill podcast for the weekend. Now you have to go and go, goddamn, everything sucks.
Makes the white pills podcast even better.
Oh, I guess it does.
They're so rare.
I guess it does, but we're just... Oh, everything's just so bad, and there's no constructive discussion on any of the things that we're actually talking about. You know, it's like, look, you are trapped within a paradigm where everything conspires to keep you under the thumb, and the only people who can break through it are people like Macron, who are like, no, the paradigm is bad, and I'm scrapping it. You know, here's some French liberty for you, and we're like, oh God, I'm gonna have to move to France.
Stop becoming French, yeah. Cheating on your wife.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Carl. Gotta learn my French again. Right, okay, let's go for the video comments.
Hi guys, just a quick one about your radio host's ignorant Clapham comments. We're actually part of the safe 73% of the homicides committed in this country. So checkmate, I guess. Safer to be male.
Oof. Well, yep, next one. Good correction, by the way.
What breaks my heart about COVID paranoia is watching the people I love, who are beautiful and talented people, submit themselves to this slow, methodical, opiated suffocation, and thereby forgo all that which they would otherwise be able to offer the world. This is descriptive of my own parents, even. How do we balance our loyalty to our loved ones with our necessity, out of self-preservation, to detach ourselves from this spiritually corrosive mode of thought?
Good question. I don't have a ready answer for it, I'm afraid. I don't think there's any detaching ourselves from it, because this is everywhere. It's all around us. You can't escape it, at least in Britain. And everyone has been conditioned to think government good. Boris, the saint and savior of the universe. I guess you've got to just do the long haul and stay in the trenches and just slowly but surely argue the case.
Well, in the UK, we do have the local elections coming up. So it would be nice to hit the Conservatives where you can.
But then who do you vote Labour?
But then who do you vote for, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if Jeremy Corbyn was in charge and he came out firmly being like, yeah, no lockdowns. Lockdowns are evil. Lockdowns are anti-liberty. I might be like...
Based Corbyn.
Yeah. I mean, what...
Maybe the IRA aren't so bad. But
you're right about Venezuela too. No, but Keir Starmer isn't going to do anything like that. Right? Keir Starmer's just going to be exactly the same as Boris on lockdowns. Yeah. Because Boris has been following Keir Starmer's playbook the whole time. Keir Starmer says something, Boris says, no, we can't possibly do that, and then the next day Boris does that. And it's just like,
I mean, if you're in London, you've got plenty of candidates to vote for there that aren't globalists.
Yes.
If you're in a lucky constituency that has candidates like that, lucky you, I guess.
Yeah, but we're not. Anyway, let's go for the next one.
Hi, all. I was just wondering, given the Biden administration's trampling on the First and Second Amendment, which it's going to be really bad if they pass H.R. 127, but and that coupled with their indefinite fortification of the elections, how far do you think they're willing to take this, and do you think we have any chance of stopping them? Are they going to get their communist revolution?
Well, I think they're going to take it the whole way, because what they'll be doing is setting the ground and the new precedent to move the Overton window even further towards the radical left. I don't really see how we can stop them. If the elections are perpetually fortified, then what are we going to do? What are we going to say? Like, and obviously, we're committed to the democratic process, so it looks like we're kind of screwed. I'm personally getting to the, maybe we should just go full communism, getting to the, let's just go right to the very end, no holds barred, let's make it as bad as it can be by the left, so everyone can be like, wait a minute, these people are just evil. And like, yes, we were saying that for quite some time, and you called us names, and now you're all trapped in your homes, you're not allowed to say anything on the internet for fear of being arrested, and if you're lucky, you might get a government mandated job at the NHS where you're forcibly vaccinated. Enjoy your freedom of the future. Let's go for the next one.
Hello, Lotus Eaters. I would like advice on starting a newspaper for my state. I find that there's so much information out there that I could die before reading even one day's worth of it. I was wondering, how do you know what you're reporting is true? And how do you know whether something is a good source or not?
Don't know why he's asking us, because we never write any of the articles. I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on starting a newspaper. For us, it is about you fact check from multiple sources. So,
yeah,
you,
is there video evidence of the thing?
Yeah, is there evidence of the thing? Can you speak to eyewitnesses and make sure you don't have just one source? Unlike the New York Times, who did with recently lying about Trump and recanting it. But anyway, never mind. Try to make sure that you're accurately representing the thing. Try and be accurate. Make sure you're not leaving anything out. Basically, make sure you hire good people who have a commitment to actually doing the work rather than promoting an agenda. And that's the best advice I think I can give.
Okay, apparently these have to be a lot shorter now. Anyways, good job on the website. It's coming along great. I was going to use this chance to give a shout out to somebody who I've been following on Instagram, Informed with Anthony. He's a Coast Guard vet, and he is a conservative Latino doing Spanish language stuff on the LA school districts and what they're doing. So there's that. Go give him a follow and check him out. He's also got a YouTube channel. Bye.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. I'm working very hard.
Hey guys, just answering a question from last week. The question was, why does Canada, New Zealand and Australia have social welfare systems such as the benefit and these sorts of things? And the very simple answer is that because they're very similar cultures to the UK, they're all part of the Commonwealth, and we sort of towed the line as being part of the Commonwealth and followed the same cultural and social development, and that's how we ended up with what we have.
Makes sense. Is that the last one, John? Great. Right. Christian says, for the love of God, please abandon your prohibition on the use of force. Save us and invade us. Who? What, you want? Do you want COVID Sharia to come to America or something, do you, Christian? Like, it's painful torture listening to Biden fight the drool falling into his tie. The broken sentences, the lies, the vacant stares, stained adult diapers, failed logic, incoherent policy, corruption, and rambling mumbles. It's embarrassing, humiliating, and grating. I tell you what, one of the clips I should have included was Biden interrupting himself in his own sentence. He starts giving an answer and then it's like, anyway, what was I saying? And it's like, who let this doddering old man into the room? Oh, wait, he's the elected president, apparently. Oh, good news. Just invade us, force us to speak real English, and make us play European football. European football.
European?
Yeah. Ban liquid cheese, done. Converts to the pound. I don't know, I'm liking the burger metric, to be honest. Make us memorise Rule Britannia, make Priti Patel the Lord Governor of North America, whatever. Just end this. End our misery. Recolonise the USA. We're sorry, forgive us the revolution. It failed. We're wrong, you guys are right. We would gladly come back under Her Majesty's rule. If you can push all these people into the North Atlantic. I'm literally crying in my coffee and burying my guns and gold as I type this. My heart is broken. Dude, it's so much worse over here, you've no idea. Like, you have entire swathes of America, states in America, where you're actually allowed to go to the shops. So
say things online. Yeah,
and say things on the internet. You have no idea how bad things really are, okay? You just
literally
do not.
The meme. If only you knew how bad it really was.
Exactly. It's so awful. Tom Rickett says, do you see the moment in the press conference where he was asked a direct question about the recent shootings and his plan for gun control, and he just ignored the question entirely and rambled about infrastructure and bridges for 5 minutes? He did the same when asked about the filibuster as well. Someone asked him about the filibuster, and he's like, yeah, so those immigrant families, immigration. He goes on for like 2 minutes. Someone's like, and then he gets bored. He's like, the filibuster? He's like, oh, yeah, Jim Crow. What the hell are you talking about, man?
Did you see the little colouring book he has as well?
Yes, it was the pictures and questions from the media.
All pre-approved.
Pre-approved. It's all staged. And that's the only way that Biden can get through anything. Cindy says, if you're in the US and you weren't terrified by Biden's coherency before that press conference, then you should be now. Correct. I believe he's a puppet, but in the end, the man's the commander-in-chief of our military and even has the nuclear codes. He was asked a question about gun control and answered about infrastructure. Even with all the notes, obviously pre-fed questions and kid gloves from the press and an earpiece, he couldn't stay coherently on topic. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, someone pointing out of all the problems of the US, at least you don't have a £5,000 exit tax.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go anywhere from the UK right now, it's £5,000, please.
Yeah. Daniel Williamson says, I'm honestly amazed that Biden came out and said he'd been in government for over 100 years. No wonder he's senile if that's the case. I mean, you've got to admire his commitment. Civic Nationalist says, hi, I'm Joe Biden and I don't remember this message. Christian S. says, watching Biden...
Someone needs to make that ending. Yeah. Like,
Watching Joe Biden trying to make a coherent sentence is like watching a puppy trying to hump a football, an American football. It's frustrating and fruitless. Yes. Henry Ashman says the kids are being explicitly sent home so Biden will take them in. How many kids didn't make it to the border? How many children will have died en route because of the promise of nice guy Joe Biden? And more importantly, how many of them are going to get sniffed by him if he lets them in? I was really tempted to do a bit of a clip and montage of that, where he's like, you know, we've got to help these kids, and then him just sniffing a kid. David says, hi guys, do you think this migrant crisis in the US will be solved by A, Democrats admitting they were wrong, doing a 180 degree change and rebuilding the wall, or B, the media moving on to something else and Dems quietly accepting millions of new voters? I think they're going to quietly accept millions of new voters while saying that they're sending loads of people back. But anyway, we're running out of time, so I'll move on to the next one. Dylan says, pro tip, if you don't want you or your children exposed to anything you consider blasphemous, don't live in a country where they already told their own church to piss off and then make their own and expect them to respect yours. Good point. That Theresa May speech was so cringe. As someone's life whose life is threatened by just leaving Islam in the bloody UK, ISIS is what the Quran entails. The Prophet himself was an extremist in his actions. Islam, unlike Christianity, treats its Prophet as God. That's interesting, and the idea that Muhammad wasn't an extremist is quite amusing, isn't it? Like, he doesn't exactly have a very nice life.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we're the extremists.
Oh man!
The weird thing about the prohibition on pictures of Muhammad as well is it really implies that Muslims, like the Muslim leaders, think that Muslims will start thinking Muhammad himself is God. It's like they're not dumb, are they? They're not that dumb. Like,
well,
Muhammad's like, I spoke to God and God says, and they're like, God, you're God? No, that's not what I said.
If you're willing to believe, like some journalists, that Muhammad literally flew to heaven on a winged horse, I mean, maybe you'll look at an image of Mehdi Muhammad and be like, that's God.
Calling you out? But seriously, the implication that Muslims are so dumb.
Mehdi Hassan can't look at a drawing of Muhammad without assuming it's God.
Yeah, he does look like God. That's right. You know, I'm going to salam at the picture of Muhammad because I think he's God. Like, come on. That we understand that Islam has a metaphysic and that it doesn't involve Muhammad personally as the man. I mean, do Muslims not understand this? Eric Yukum says, kowtowed communist states of America or the Islamic Caliphate of Britain. Oh boy, what great choices. I guess I'm moving to France. What choice do we have? MEP Flyboy says, have to say that Callum has been on form today with his commentary and wit. Hey. P.S. France has paid a very high price for standing up against this violent and hateful ideology, but it's too late for them now. Patel is one of many, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the downsides of France here, that they have ghettos in an extreme sense that we're sort of getting to.
Mm.
But it's just embarrassing that we can look at them, we know everything that's about to happen, and we're like, that won't happen to us. Actual idiots.
We'll be the true caliphate of Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's France is the false caliphate.
We'll make diversity actually work.
Yeah.
Diversity will work this time. France isn't real, diversity is our strength. Our diversity is strength is better.
Benjamin says, I feel bad for the UK. A government that takes on extraordinary powers during a so-called crisis rarely relinquishes all of them once the crisis has passed. All that remains of you is to wait and see what France does and what FR does and aren't coming back. Bit of a typo at the end there. Karen says, yesterday I received an email from our MP thanking me for my input and saying they didn't plan to make the vaccine mandatory. Well, that's good. But then he went on to talk about vaccine certificates. I need to formulate a polite and logical response. But I ask you, how is bringing in a certificate not just a backdoor way of making it mandatory? It's certainly a form of coercion, and it seems to me it's at least the first step in a Chinese-style social credit system. I guess you'll have to appeal to the conservatives on terms they understand and say, well, hang on, that's anti-equality. I'm a conservative.
Appeal to their communism.
Yeah, exactly. Appeal to... Well, they might discriminate against some people. Good point. We don't discriminate. We're conservatives. Brian said, honestly, like, you tell us. Like, everything's gone, man. Again, I say we welcome our vaccinated COVID Muslim overlords and embrace and salam before the holy altar of Islamo-Sharia. COVID Sharia, sorry. That's what I think we should do.
Who could have predicted this?
Go back 5 years.
It's just like, you know, George Orwell and Aldous Huxley or whatever, just looking at their books like, yeah, I wouldn't have come up with that.
No. Christopher Hitchens, though, you can hear the spinning in the grave. as his body spins around. Like, just saying, Christopher, maybe Christianity had a point. Brian Munce, do you think these lockdown laws are able to maintain control when the economy finally collapses and hyperinflation takes hold? Oh, no, it's all going to get very exciting then. Quite looking forward to it, to be honest. Not because of COVID-19, because it was just about the collapse of just about to collapse in early 2020 as furlough extended the life support after all the rounds of quantitative easing. I'm not sure, to be honest, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. Henry says, who'd have thought the Tories would have effectively raised the drinking age to 40? Come June, all of the legal restrictions...
You know, that,
based?
The Conservative platform, going abroad, a £5,000 tax, the drinking age raised to 40.
Sex between people who aren't already married, illegal!
The monster raving loony party are like, what?
That's right, we're Conservatives!
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I just can't get over how this has happened. Boris, this is your Britain. You preside over all of this, dumbass. Oh, God. Oh. I know the Metropolitan Labour lovey's my age. Oh, yeah, right. Sorry to interrupt your comment there. Right, there was an article in the Times the other day being like, well, for some of us, the lockdowns have been great. Yeah, who? Who? The 40-year-old wine aunts. The people who have been locked in their palatial, like, London flats, drinking wine all day and then typing the old spurgy article onto the Times. That's who it's been perfect for. Like, the privileged, spoiled brat elite it's been good for. Because they don't really like going out of the house anyway, because what they've got to do? They've got to go and be embarrassed. CEOs of vaccine companies. Yeah, exactly, John. Like, honestly. And it's just like, listen, you privileged shits. Like, there are people up and down this country, right, who are living in, like, 2 or 3 bedroom houses with, like, 4 or 5 kids. And they're like, this is awful. This is awful for me. This is awful for my kids. This is awful for our financial prospects and our futures. And you're like, yeah, but I liked it because I got paid for working from home and I don't have kids climbing the walls and going nuts and breaking things all around me. It's like, yeah, you don't. Yeah. You're a selfish shit. You're a childless genetic dead end who I'm going to... No.
Which one of those groups actually continues the country?
Journalists don't, okay? You're a journalist. That's the problem.
Like anyone, they could be working in finance. Yeah. But if it's just like exactly. 50 years old, no kids, you're a journalist.
You're a journalist. You've become a journalist. I hate it, though. I hate it. You selfish, privileged shits. I just can't stand it. For me, a vaccine passport for international travel makes sense, particularly for incoming traffic, but internally makes no bloody sense. Everyone's simping for New Zealand due to how well... Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to swear. It's just this is getting me angry. I'll swear in the Zoom call. I'll save it all up.
Reminder, Zoom call at 4 p.m.
Yeah, a Zoom call at 4 p.m. for the gold tier members. You get to hear me swear for a bit, and I'm going to. Anyway, we'll go. Just a continual string of me swearing. But yeah, everyone's simping for New Zealand due to how well they've handled things. But guess what? They've shut the borders, made new arrivals quarantine for a fortnight, and once that's done, they're free to live life as normal, not lock the locals up and leave the borders open. Well, I mean, that probably would have worked. But the thing is, that means that they're going to have closed borders forever. Hmm.
Why is that bad?
Yeah, maybe Jacinda was ahead of the curve.
Did you see that the Labour...
We're not going to have any Islamo-leftism in New Zealand because we're not going to let anyone in.
Did you see Yvette Cooper talking about the borders today?
Oh, God, no, what was she saying?
Close them. It was just like, what?
Comrade Corbyn was also, you know, like, what is it with all the Labour Party getting based?
Yeah, but they're all looking at Boris and they're like, well, there's a third wave from Europe and we're not infected. Close the borders. And the Conservatives are like, we can't do that. We need to conserve Labour's Britain.
But Tony Blair will be upset.
Not Lord Tony.
He's not actually a Lord, is he?
No.
Thank God. I mean, well, I ask because...
Maybe Boris will make him one by Tuesday. So.
Yeah, exactly. I ask because I don't see why the Conservatives wouldn't. They're like, yeah, Tony Blair did everything right. Mm. Anyway, Nicholas Malson says, hi, folks. Great job on the recent premium podcast. Well, thank you very much. I've listened through the Thick Concepts, Ethical Knowledge, and the interview you did with Gad Saad. Absolutely amazing work. Keep it up. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Also, I'm convinced your work is constantly improving, so now I'm gold tier. Wow. I mean, we have been working our asses off because literally the government prevents us from doing anything else. Like, we can't, like, you know, slack off. because that would mean literally staying at home and being prisoners.
Do you want to go paintballing or do work? We can only do one of them, so we'll do work.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to go paintballing, man. The before times are so great. I'll tell my grandchildren about it one day. We used to have hobbies, do you know? What do you mean hobbies, Grandad? Well, we used to go out and have fun together and with people we didn't even know sometimes. Grandad, this is ridiculous.
Profane.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Grandad, what a... you need another vaccination.
I'm telling Mum.
It's all true, I swear. Anyway, I've got to go salam to Muhammad now.
All right, see you later, Grandad.
Tearful Spark. Hey, man. Oi, lads. Got a phone for my future boss. I got a job. Oh, well done. Called me right after the video I sent in. Sounds of jubilation. Well, it sounds like he must listen to the podcast. Alan Rickard said, I have a question. How do we convince normies in the UK that guns are a good thing? Dude, we can't convince normies in the UK that being allowed to have their houses is a good thing.
We can't even convince them they shouldn't be jailed for their tweets. So, yeah. Jesus, I mean, we'll go up lower bars.
Yeah. There's no way. I'm going to move on because we're running out. Cautiously, Catoriously Wise says, Hi, Lord Seaters. Is it morally wrong to try and hold leftists to their own standards? I'm not going to read out the following paragraphs because my answer is no. It's not morally wrong. They should be held to those standards. And if they don't like those standards, maybe they should stop advocating for them. That's right. I'm a conservative. Chris Simone says, morning from the armpit of the US. I'll get you guys to say it one day.
What's the name?
I don't know. You didn't give us it.
Is it Arkansas?
I could be. I always assumed that was Florida. But Florida these days is, I guess, base freedom land. So this isn't, and I'm just going on it because of the unbelievable heat in Florida. It's awful.
You went in the summer.
Oh, I didn't want to.
Why didn't you go in the winter?
It doesn't make it less warm in the summer.
What are you talking about? Of course it's colder in the winter.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it less warm in the summer if it's colder in the winter.
Why did you book in the summer?
Well, it wasn't my choice. It was my wife's demand. I want to go to Disneyland.
Fair enough, then.
Why? Because I really want to. When? August. Oh, it was awful. Anyway, what are your thoughts on the idea that overpopulation is the root of a fair few of the world's problems? Because many times I brought this up, I get looks like I've got six heads, and maybe we have too many people. It's not really true, the sort of Malthusian thesis on population. It was just based on predictions that if things continue as they are, but the thing is they don't continue as they are. It turns out that once people reach a certain standard of living, they just stop having kids, and then you go into the problem that we're going to experience in about 30 years' time, which is a total demographic collapse, because a bunch of childless leftists will have arrived in their like 60s and 70s. They'll be like, so I need some young bodies around me to give me healthcare. And they'll be like, well, where are they? Well, I don't know, where are they? Well, where are your kids? Well, kids, I didn't have kids. I hate kids. I don't have to have kids. It's like, oh, I think we've solved the problem. So yeah, we're actually looking at a demographic winter in the West. So, you know, it turns out that's not really the root of the problem. In fact, that was a thesis that was kind of proven wrong like 50 years ago. Joseph Smith says, I had my first real brush with my university's equity, diversity and inclusion policy yesterday. One of my professors removed my paper from a peer editing tool because certain arguments I made can be perceived as not upholding the principles of the university's EDI strategy. Right, okay. Well, it's verboten.
That is actually Brave New World.
That's very Brave New World.
Like, your research here or your paper here goes against the world they want to build.
The orthodoxy.
Therefore, this research isn't approved. It might be true, but causes instability within the EDI. So
you can always go to Iceland and research it in private when no one's ever going to read it, eventually. Fortunately, the paper will still be graded, but by a professional grader, because apparently it risks offending other students and may provoke students to grade in a way not dictated by the criteria we specifically grade in the grading guide.
Might pollute their minds.
So what you're saying, like, the students can't be trusted to do their jobs because they might be offended. Amazing. Well, I guess I should be glad that it's all happened, since the professor wasn't too happy about my saying in class that we shouldn't consider someone's race when we decide whether to hire them. Something, something, judged by the content of the character, something, something. Also, this is a computer sciences course. Fortunately, most of the professors are not so inquisitorial. The fact that you have to write a paper about equality, diversity, and inclusion in a computer sciences course speaks all you need to know. I did a computer science degree, or at least half of one, at Coventry University before I was like, this is boring beyond all hell. But none of that was there in like 2002. And it wasn't in Vicky's either. So like this is all very new, the cultural revolution. But on the plus side, soon you'll just be able to say, look, I'm a Muslim. I don't have to care about equality. And
praise to Allah. Save us.
praise to Allah. So anyway.
Because I mean, that's the one thing we can hope for, which is what happens here will be what happened in Iran, which is the Muslims and the leftists work together before the Muslims turn around and go, didn't you know communism is Iran?
Anyway, thanks for watching, folks. If you want more content from us, you can go to lotuses.com, sign up, become a premium member, which gives you the ability to comment all the articles that we put up and obviously watch all of our premium content. We also have loads of great free content that's widely available. Lots of news articles that are being written about really pertinent subjects. Rory seems to have a really good knack for getting really good topics up on the dispatches, and I'm very, very pleased with how things are going. So have a great weekend, and we will see you at the same time on Monday.